Okay, our next presenter is Gregory Tung, who is at Colorado School of Public Health. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Health Systems Management and Policy, and also with the Pediatric Injury Prevention Education and Research Program.
Okay, thanks for the introduction, Sue. And today I'm going to be talking about state legislation to address concussion in youth sports. But the first thing I want to do is just to recognize my collaborators on this project. So Dawn Comstock is really kind of leading the overall project. She's at the Colorado School of Public Health. Sarah Fields, our lawyer on the project, is also a faculty member at the University of Colorado Denver. And Dustin Curie, our research assistant, is at the Colorado School of Public Health. And I guess I also have to say that none of us have anything to disclose financially. So I'm really going to try to do three things in this presentation. Based off of some of the policy mapping work that's been done by Sarah Fields, I'm going to give you a little bit more information and a description about what these laws are and the current state of them. I'm also going to present to you some preliminary results from a sequence of research interviews that we've conducted with legislative sponsors to give us a better sense of how did this actually look in terms of advancing these laws at the state level. And I'm going to wrap up by giving you some results from a pilot survey that we've conducted with coaches to give us a little bit of a better indication as to what level of knowledge do they have about their own state's concussion law. But first, what's really motivating all of this? I think we've got good consciousness of this, but just to be thorough, concussions in youth sports is a very serious problem. It's estimated that 300,000 sports-related concussions happen amongst 15 to 24-year-olds in the U.S. every year. And concussions have come to represent almost 20% of injuries reported in major youth sports. And so probably not surprisingly, the number one sport we see is boys football. But in girls sports, it's a close race between girls lacrosse and girls soccer. But girls lacrosse kind of ekes out girls soccer in terms of the number of concussions per athlete exposure. And so because of this increase in consciousness, we've seen the majority, and actually almost all the states in the U.S., pass legislation to try to address the issue. And this legislation has been specifically focused on youth sports and student athletes. And it's not been so much focused on primary prevention, but instead the focus of the legislation has been on identifying people who had a concussion, or youth athletes who have had a concussion, and then pulling them and keeping them out of play until they've made a full recovery. And I think some of you might be familiar with the Zachary Leitstedt law. So in Washington State in 2009, they were the first state to pass one of the concussion laws, and they called it the Zachary Leitstedt law. And it was named for a middle school football player who unfortunately sustained two concussions in pretty rapid succession, had a very negative outcome, spent some time in a coma. And that was kind of the motivating story that really went along with proposed legislation. And I've spent so much time on this because this particular law has really gone on to be somewhat of a model law, in that the specific elements that were included in this law have been emulated by many of the other states that have adopted concussion laws since. Okay, so, and what are those specific elements? So the Leitstedt law and many laws since have kind of been looked at in terms of these five main components, which include specific criteria for when an athlete should be removed from play. That really centers around identifying a potential concussion. Specific criteria for when an athlete should return to play. And closely tied with that is who can make that return to play decision. And the last two items that I have here are educational. So does the law have specific requirements for education for coaches, and does the law have specific requirements for education to parents around concussions in youth sports? So here is a map of the United States that gives us a current snapshot of the state of policy. And so what you can see is every state except for lonely Mississippi currently has some legislation in place that's intended to address the issue of concussions in youth sports. So instead of overwhelming you with information and putting a giant grid in place, I thought I'd just give you a really quick summary. So when you look across all these laws. To what extent do they incorporate those five main components that we talked about earlier? So pretty much almost all the states have specific criteria related to removing a student athlete from play. They have specific criteria about when a student athlete can return to play. And they also have specify who can make that return to play decision. Although we'll come back and talk about this a little bit later, because even though almost all the states specify who can make that return to play decision, who's actually on that list varies tremendously across the states. And so for education, there's a little bit more variation, but what we tend to see is states adopting specific requirements for education, for coaches, and for parents, but not to the same extent that we see for the other criteria in the law. And so when we think about that, the very first state law that was passed in this area is in 2009, and that just 4 years later, 49, all but one state has passed one of these laws. That really represents an incredibly rapid spread of this particular policy, and I think across the spectrum of other injury prevention policies, really in the absence of federal intervention, we typically don't see this type of thing happen. And to me, that really begs the question of why and how did that end up happening. And just to more clearly illustrate this, we've got this figure for you, which are just the Kaplan-Meier estimates, survival estimates of concussion laws versus clean indoor air laws. So clean indoor air laws are one of the laws that I think is one of the most evidence-based state-level public health policies. And so in blue here, you have concussion laws, and in red, you have clean indoor air laws. And so when the line goes down, that represents additional states adopting the law. And so there's a clear difference here. There's been a really rapid adoption of state-level concussion laws. And so to try to inform or in some way to gain more information about this question of why have these laws passed so quickly, we ended up conducting a sequence of qualitative research interviews with the legislative sponsors of these laws in various states. So we selected Washington, Texas, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Florida. And I'm going to confess that this is very much a work in progress. So we've completed these interviews with Texas, Mississippi, and Arkansas, and we're still in the process of completing them with Washington and Florida, but we have some preliminary results that I think would be worth sharing with you. So when we talked to these legislative sponsors, and we just asked them for what really happened, what was the underlying story, how did this law end up coming to be, what we heard consistently from the people that we talked to was there's really wide recognition of concussions in youth sports as being a major problem. There's really not that much of a debate. All of the debate and the discussion surrounds, well, how do we actually address it and what should we do about it? And in some of that debate really centered around in thinking about the law in the way that the Zachary Leitstadt law was structured, a lot of that debate centers around who should be able to make a return to play decision. And so we heard about lobbying from different provider groups. And there's a tremendous amount of variation that exists amongst the states. So there are some states where only an MD can make that return to play decision. And there are other states where it's a much broader group of individuals. That includes nurse practitioners, athletic trainers. Interestingly, we heard pretty consistently in the people that we've talked to that chiropractic groups were very focused in their lobbying to try to be included as a provider that could make that return to play decision. And I think because of that, this is one of the areas where you see tremendous variation that exists across the laws in the U.S. The other area that we heard about some potential resistance, was actually a little bit surprising to me. We heard about resistance from coaches and coaching groups. And the underlying reasoning behind this was, or that we heard kind of secondhand through the legislative sponsors, was that coaching groups were concerned about the burden that this legislation was going to place on coaches, that a lot of the implementation of the law was going to fall to coaches, and that they're in a situation where many coaches are volunteer or paid very low salaries, and they were concerned that it was just asking them to do too much for how they were compensated, and it might create a barrier to actually recruiting coaches into certain athletic leagues. But despite those little wrinkles, what we heard overall relative to other types of legislation was that there was really strong support for policy action in this particular area, including strong support from youth sports organizations. So places like Pop Warner, for those of you who might not be familiar with it, it's the Youth Football League or Youth Youth Football League, and also the National Federation of State High School Associations. And legislative sponsors also talked about the fact that there really wasn't any strong organized opposition. And when I think about other policy areas like in tobacco or alcohol, it's easy to think about the strong organized industry opposition. And there really wasn't that present in this particular situation. And actually, the really prominent organizations that are involved, people like the National Football League and the NCAA, were actually in support of this legislation at the state level. The NFL, so much so that they ended up sending lobbyists to many states and helping to coordinate testimony that was in favor of state legislation by NFL players and NFL teams. So I think that the takeaway message from those interviews from us was, even though there were some nuances and some debates, really there was overwhelming support for this particular legislation, with the exception of Mississippi. If people want to talk about that, we can later. But we heard these stories about proposed legislation flying through committee, flying through both chambers, and then being signed into law. But there's still this outstanding question of, do these policies, do these laws actually work? Right? And I think that's still very much an open question. And so we have an appreciation that coaches have a very significant responsibility in the implementation of this law. So the next step that we took was trying to understand better, to what extent do coaches even understand the law that's present in their particular state. So here are the results from a pilot survey that we conducted with coaches, just trying to assess what level of knowledge they have about their own state's law. And so what we found is that, well, coaches, they're pretty good at knowing that their state has a law. That's step one. That's important. They're also relatively good at knowing the specifics around removal from play. And they're also relatively good at knowing some of the specifics and the criteria around return to play. They're slightly less good at knowing about what are the requirements for themselves in terms of education and training. And they're pretty bad at knowing who is, in their state, allowed to make that return to play decision, and they're even worse at knowing what level of education and training is required for parents of students that play in sports. So I think the results of the survey was interesting to us, and given the importance of coaches in the implementation of this policy, I think one of the things it does for us is to highlight the importance of increasing their level of knowledge. I think it'll be difficult for them to be an effective partner in the implementation of these policies if they don't understand what the laws and the policies are themselves. So I'll talk some about the limitations of this work. So we've got relatively small sample sizes for our interviews in the states that we selected, and our survey was just a pilot survey. Also, the interviews that we conducted, even though we conducted multiple interviews, were really from the perspective of people who were in favor of the legislation and the legislative sponsors, staffers, and those type of people. So we're really only getting one type of perspective. But despite that, I think there are some important information that comes from it and some important conclusions that we can draw. So one is, I think it's clear that state concussion laws have spread really rapidly, and from the interviews that we've conducted and the people that we've talked to, they've really attributed that to a broad recognition of the problem, even amongst the public and kind of the society's consciousness around the issue, broad support for policy action, and really lack of any organized or strong opposition to the policy. We also identified through the pilot survey that coaches' knowledge regarding their state's laws should probably improve if they're going to be more effective partners in implementing the policy at the state level. And I think the other thing that comes out of this work, or maybe is something that's pulsing in all of your minds right now, is there's still very much this need for the evaluation of state laws and the specific components that comprise the state laws. I think we're still at the place where we know what these laws are intended to do. To what extent do they actually accomplish what they're intended to do? And so in terms of next steps, that's really where I think a lot of this work, and probably a lot of you are thinking all of this flows to, is the evaluation of these state laws, which is actually a component of this project that we're continuing, and all of this is very much a work in progress. And if people want to hear more about that later, I'm happy to talk about it. But thank you.